Hi, welcome to The Deadline. I'm Laura, your host and founder of the New Jersey Ghost Hunter Society. That's me after a day of work. We have our cemetery hunts coming up, actually, this Friday night. By the time you're listening to the show, we'll already be in progress. God willing, if the weather holds out and it doesn't rain, we'll be going down to St. Teresa's and Summit, and that's for members only, from 9 to 10. If it does rain, sadly, we'll be doing it August 5th on Saturday night. After that, we have Friday, August 18th, and if it rains, it'll be Saturday, August 19th. We're still working out the mechanics and the logistics as to which cemetery we'll be going to. And our upcoming meetings start back in September. All meetings run from 7 to 8:30 p.m. The first one is September 6th at the Hazlitt Library, located at 251 Middle Road in Hazlitt. That's headed up by Gregory and Sherry Irish, team leaders for the Central Jersey Division. And then we have September 19th at 293 Main Street. That's the Community Center in Hackettstown, New Jersey. That's headed up by myself. That's the Northwest Division. And then September 28th, the Bogota Recreation Center, located at 162 West Main Street in Bogota. That's headed up by Laura Lindemann, the team leader for the Northeastern Division of the New Jersey Ghost Hunter Society. So, I gotta tell you, I had an absolute blast in Gettysburg.
Really?
I went out there the weekend of July 22nd. And it was a little rough getting out there. There was some traffic pockets that I hit, you know, because of construction, road work and stuff. But I got out there, and luckily Renee Foley from the Wyndham is a doll. And she had already taken Jeff Belanger on a tour, and I just pulled in. She's like, I got a hard hat, you can come. I said, let me park and check in and get my stuff up to the room, and she waited. She was a doll, so she took me through what's going to be our beautiful hotel and convention center. And I took some pictures, got a lay of the land. She also gave me two tickets for the Fields of Freedom, I think it was, the name of the half-hour movie about the Civil War.
Oh, wow.
So, by the time I was trying to get checked out on Sunday and get on the road, I got to see, like, the last 10 minutes of it. But at least it was good for me because I got to see the Gateway Theaters.
Right.
Gorgeous. Oh, my God. And they're all the theaters, like, state-of-the-art and stadium seating. The seats are almost like that kind of pleather, like, nice leathery
nice
material. The cup holders, they're graduated sizes of these seats. They're definitely bigger than normal theater seats, so you definitely have comfort. You have plenty of leg room.
Oh.
I mean, really, I was very impressed.
Sign me up.
Yeah, they did. They put a lot of thought into, like, I think they must have polled people and said, what's your chief complaints about movie theaters? And they just incorporated that, because this is like movie theater perfection. You know, and maybe, too, with all, like, Netflix and everything online that you can get rentals from, maybe the theaters are getting a little wise, like, well, if we're going to be charging $7, $8, $12 for somebody to see a show, you got to make it worth it.
A lot of the theaters are doing that. That's why they have now the VIP seating in a lot of these theaters now.
VIP seating?
Mm-hmm. They're leather chairs. They're bigger. They're wider. They're right in the, like, the center rows of the theater. And they also offer at your seat concession stand. You put your order at your seat. Same price, they deliver it to you right to your seat.
Oh, boy. That's nice. I mean, for a guy, that's just like being home and barking an order to the wife, but for the rest of us...
Hey, it's pretty close.
Yeah. Wow, that's pretty cool. Well, I have to say, the theaters were gorgeous. The Gateway Gettysburg, and even though it's kind of like not in the center of town, you know, it's on York Road, which is like Highway 30, but they've got plenty of land, nice parking. I stayed in the Marriott, which is right next to the Wyndham that's being built. I had a nice room. They had the internet access, so the computer, you know, I was able to plug that in, update the website when Brian put the new show up, so that was good. And, you know, they put a lot of thought into that. In fact, that Marriott, Renee was telling me they may be up for, like, some type of an award within the hoteling industry because of the way they designed their lobby and put all the furniture. It really is, you know, I'm more the, like, Queen Anne ball and claw kind of stuff, and this is more modern. But for modern, I have to say, it was really pretty cool looking, very sharp.
Well, the funny thing about, like, you said, the Wyndham and the Marriott and how gorgeous they are, it's like Gettysburg isn't that big of a town. You think they'd have put those places in a big metropolitan area, like New York, you know, Newark, somewhere big where they're going to get a lot of people.
Well, they know the tourism's kicking up there, you know, and they want to be in on the ground floor because all over Gettysburg I saw all these signs, yes, casino, no casino.
Oh, okay, yeah. Now I understand.
So now, to quote a friend of mine, you know, you can... If the casino comes into being,
oh, forget
that could be like, you know, haunted casino. What are the odds you'll see a ghost? You know, I said, well, that's clever. That was pretty good of him.
Did they ID the ghosts too?
Did we what?
I said, would they ID the ghosts?
I don't know.
Make sure they're 21 and over to get in the casinos.
But that would be interesting. I mean, if casinos come to Gettysburg, because that's going to really, you know, bring in a whole other.
True, but it'll...
Crowd.
It will, you know? but that might hurt the crowd they have now.
Yeah, I think so, because people who go out there now are either historians,
right.
You know, they're into the history part of it, or they're the ghost hunter part of it. Some of them are a combination of the two, you know?
I think
a gambler doesn't... I mean, come on, a gambler sits in a casino, like, holed up in front of one of those
right.
One-armed bandits. I mean, they're like mole people. They just come in, and they don't
yep.
even, like, see the sun, you know? And
personally, I think if they put a casino in Gettysburg, Gettysburg will be destroyed. I think these people, some guys, you know, they go down in casinos, they get all boozed and liquored up with all the free alcohol they're getting in there, and they're going to go, like, Saks Bridge or something like that. They're going to start spray painting or breaking stuff, and...
Yeah,
I'm feeling that they'll destroy Gettysburg if they put a casino in there.
Yeah, I don't really look, you know. I mean, we have AC. You know what?
Exactly.
Make the 3-hour drive, because Atlantic City's already shot to crap anyway.
You know what?
Why take a really pretty town and pretty area like Gettysburg and contaminate it, you know? I mean, and that, remember when they were starting up with AC?
Right.
And they were putting the casinos, and that was the big thing. Oh, with the revenue that we're generating, we won't even have to collect tolls on the parkway anymore. Oh, it's going to be a shot in the arm for Atlantic City. It's going to really renovate. It's going to make it beautiful. It didn't.
No. Nope.
I mean, you can walk from one casino to the next, and as long as that's all you look at, you're okay. You go one city block out away from a casino, and it is crap.
Yep.
And I'm sorry, people in Atlantic City, but I've been there. I've done conventions down there for companies I've worked for, like at the big convention
right.
center and
right.
stuff. And it's there's that dichotomy. I mean, you'd have to be deaf, dumb, and blind to ignore the obvious there.
You walk away from the casino and you're scared for your life.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's... I have to say, I like when I've been down to the Borgata, because at least that's like a world unto itself.
Right.
You know, because I'm not into gambling, but they have all the beautiful stores, and it's kind of like a mall effect, so I can kind of wander
more
around.
More like shopping. I'm shocked.
No, I mean, I don't really anymore, but if I'm really like, if it was like, well, wander around and look at something,
right.
Plus the
right.
the Borgata has an amazing spa.
So
that's more what I'm into, not so much the shopping, but the spa stuff and the nice workout. But the gambling just leaves me flat, so... You know, I don't know. I just hope they don't do that to Gettysburg, because I don't know how you could keep a tight enough rein on the gambling to keep
yeah.
it where it keeps... There's a certain pristine quality to Gettysburg,
right.
and it's going to be contaminated if you bring that in.
As soon as the politicians see the money signs, forget it. You know, oh, you know, we put a casino here, we're going to generate $300 million for Gettysburg, and oh, well, this will be good for our town, and da-da-da-da-da-da.
And the hello, Pennsylvania taxpayers, you'll never see a benefit
nope.
from it. Never. Trust the Jersey girl and guy here.
Go up.
Yeah, to compensate for all the extra police and all the problems that you
yep.
generate from it. And,
police, fire, ambulance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just, it's not a good deal. But
so we vote no.
We vote no, yeah. But beyond that... the whole Gateway Gettysburg area is nice, and I timed it. It's exactly 6 minutes from the time you pull out of their parking lot to be right in this heart of downtown Gettysburg.
Beautiful.
So you can't complain. That was in summer driving, you know, at the height of the tourist season, 6 minutes door-to-door. So it's great. It's like you can be out there. And then when you get on that main strip, there's every fast food joint you could
right.
want. Plus, when the Wyndham's completed, they're bringing in this, I forget the name of the chef, but he's like a head honcho chef. He's done like some of the best hotels and restaurants in Europe and the United States, and they're bringing him.
Wow.
And he even had input to the design of the restaurant. I guess I I think typically the American dining is like one big gigantic room and fit as many tables in as you can.
Yes.
And he has brought it up to the more European higher level of what they call compartmentalization. So he has the restaurant compartmentalized.
Okay.
So therefore, when they were showing us how the walls are going up, and there's like a dining area, and it's like kind of like a dining area of maybe like five or six tables.
Right.
And then you have one that would be like an overgrown booth in a diner, which maybe could sit 12 people
okay.
at one table, so they're by themselves. So it's kind of like this nice sequestered
nice.
Kind of
nice.
Sitting. Seating, so that way you're not on top of everybody, you don't have all that noise. Because that's what I've noticed. You go to these restaurants like Olive Garden, excuse me, and all these places, that you can't hear the person sitting across the table from you. It's so loud and obnoxious. I mean, it's just, and I'm like, I was raised, you know, in the old days where you got all dressed up, you went out to a nice dinner, gentlemen were required to wear jackets after six and a tie, and it was a nice, quiet,
right.
two-hour, peaceful, enjoyable meal, course after course. And nowadays, it's all like, you know, it's like cattle rotation. Get them in, get them out. Get
yep.
them in, get them out. And everybody's screaming. And then these people, like the other night I went to the haunted Charlie Brown's in Hackettstown.
Okay.
Went there the other night for dinner. And these people come in, mother, father, two kids. I have my back to them, so I don't see them, but God knows I can hear them. And I know, like, in recent years, the mommy political correct thing is like, use your inside voice. God, that's annoying. But anyway, that's what some mommies who have like half a brain in their head who actually are bent on somewhat rearing a child
right.
with manners will say, use your inside voice. These parents were not. They were just letting this kid scream at the top of her lungs, I want my crayons, I want my crayons. And I'm like, the person sitting across the table from me cannot hear me. At a normal conversational level. And let's face it, it's not like I have a meek, mild voice, right?
No,
I mean,
not even close.
Poor Brian's like listening to me like yap for an hour to length here. But these kids screaming and carrying on, and that's what these restaurants are like nowadays.
Yep.
You can't go anywhere where you can just have a nice, quiet meal,
well, no,
relax,
to the,
and talk.
Those places, that's when you have to go in there $100, $150 a plate.
Because okay.
the average person can't afford that with kids. So
this is true.
That's what you're not paying for the good food, you're paying for the ambiance of not having any kids around you.
And you know, don't laugh, but way back in the 80s when I would be going out like for meals and stuff, and I, you know, with my then husband, I'd walk into a restaurant and I'd see some screaming memes, and I would just slip the maitre d' like an extra 20 and like, get me away from that. I mean, whatever you have to do, do not seat us, you know. I used to have, Raul was my favorite maitre d'. Raul at the Black Orchid. Oh, wonderful. And the food was amazing. And I did a lot of, like, corporate events and things. So I was always getting primed and schmoozed and treated to, like, I mean, we lived well. Let's put it that way. I lived well for nothing because places were always saying, come and have dinner and, you know. But my favorite was Raul and at the Black Orchid. And one night I showed up and I was with my then husband and... And he said, I have a table for you, Madam. He used to always call me Madam Laura, right? And he's, Madam Laura, I have a table for you. And I'm like, so he walks me over, and there were people, like, kind of close. And I leaned over to Raul, and I said, you know, I just found out I'm expecting, and I was hoping to have a little celebratory dinner with my husband tonight. And he's like, oh, and he got all, like, definitely. He goes, Madam Laura, Monsieur Jeff, follow me. And he made us walk throughout the entire restaurant. And he said, the minute you see the table that you want, even if someone's at it, they're gone. He said, you tell me you want that table and it's yours. So we walked all the way around and I finally said to Jeff, I like that one. So sure enough, but nobody was in it. I wasn't that rude.
I was about to say.
No. But he made sure I got the table that I wanted. Then they brought over my dessert and they didn't charge me for that either because they were like, they know it's my favorite. And then he said he wanted to bring the bottle of the best champagne that the restaurant had because to celebrate that I was pregnant.
Oh, my God.
But I was like, I can't have it. He goes, oh, then he brought over sparkling cider for me. He brought over the champagne for Jeff. I was like, those are the days. Man, I tell you, the 80s were really good. When people just blew through money, it was amazing. But anyway.
Wow.
Yeah. So, but that was like the kind of restaurant that you could go to and hear yourself think.
Right.
You know, it was all white glove service, real silverware, real china, you know.
Well, they still have them, but like I said, you pay for them.
Yeah, and they're hard to find. I think the last nice one I went to in, like, semi-recent history, we're talking, like, 2001, was, It's down in Middletown. Now the name escapes me, and it's a guy. I think it's just like a guy, like Shay Nicholas or something like that. Or just Nicholas Restaurant, something like that down in Middletown. And that's where you, I mean, even when I was sitting there, I was kind of like holding myself, like my arms and everything, because I was chilly. The hostess came over with a wrap, and she said, "I notice you're chilly. Would you like to borrow one of our wraps?" They keep a stack of nice, just plain black wraps to put over a woman's shoulders if she's got a chill. I mean, that's service. You know, gone are the days. But, yeah, that restaurant rocked. And, in fact, I went there for dinner, and that December when the Star Ledger published its list of the top restaurants in the state for the foregoing year, that came out number one. Nice. Yeah, it was Restaurant Nicholas. I'm pretty sure that was the name of it. But yeah, same deal. It was a $200 meal, you know. Worth it, though. I mean, every now and then you just got to get dressed up and you got to do it, you know. Yeah. But so anyway, back to Gettysburg. So I had a blast. I got out there and Renee was kind enough. She took me on the tour, gave me the tickets for the movie and everything, which I caught 10 minutes of on Sunday. And then I think Friday night I worked on the site, got that all taken care of. Saturday got up and made it over to Vince Wilson's conference that he had going on at the Holiday Inn Battlefield, and it was great. I got to see, like, you know, a lot of the people that were at our conference in April: John Zaffis, Kelly Weaver, Rosemary Guiley, Carl Petrie. But I got to see Troy Taylor, I'm still like a kind of fan, kind of shy around him, you know, because it's like I've always like looked up to him, and so I get like kind of like, you know, stupid starstruck, and I'm like, oh God, I'm going to make such an idiot of myself talking to this guy.
And she probably did.
I probably did. I'm sorry, Troy, but yeah, I get a little starstruck because it's like, I mean, to me, he's like the modern day Hans Holzer. You know, he's like our generation's Hans Holzer. Okay. He's that prolific. He's that experienced. And you know what? And he's not in any way pompous and threatening and frightening like Hans is. I mean, I've never met Hans Holzer, but I've heard from people who have that, wow, I mean, he'll like put you in a place in a New York minute, and you know, he just doesn't take any guff, and he's kind of like scary. And Troy is not like that at all. You know, it's only me being starstruck because I'm like, wow, he's written like 30 some odd books, and you know, he's like the deal here.
Oh, yeah, is there anything that can keep Laura quiet? That's a good thing.
So at one point, I have to tell you this. I wish I could have had a picture taken. I was sitting, I saw like Jeff and Vince in the lobby of the Holiday Inn. I guess somebody else was presenting at this point. And I came around and I saw there was an empty chair, and I just wanted to sit in a nice comfy chair. So I looked at them kind of motion, like, can I sit here? And they're, like, talking, and they kind of motion back, like, yeah, have a seat, you know. So I sat there. And when I sit down and I look straight ahead of me, there's John Zaffis and Troy Taylor. So now you have John Zaffis, Troy Taylor, Vince Wilson, Jeff Belanger, and little old me, you know.
And little old nothing you.
Nothing me. Nothing me is sitting there with these four greats. And I'm like, oh, God, maybe I shouldn't be here. But I thought, you know what, I'll just be cool, just hang out, because the chair is comfortable, and my butt's loving life over the crap that's in the conference room, you know, so I'm sitting here, you know, and at one point, Carol Nesbitt walks by, and she even stops. Now, that's Mark Nesbitt's Ghosts of Gettysburg author, Mark Nesbitt's wife, Carol. She comes by, and she says, wow, this is the power circle. And I looked at her, I said, oh, I'm just absorbing the energy, I'm not generating it, you know, but... But, you know, I got to interject a few comments here and there and be part of the conversation. So that was, and that's where I was like, oh, my God, you know, because for how much of a passion ghost hunting and everything has been of mine, and, you know, you revere these people. You're like, wow, they've made it. They're the authors. They're the big deal. And, like, John Zaffis, he's on Sci-Fi and, you know, this, that, and the other. And I'm sitting here. I'm like, I wish somebody had a picture of it, because this is, like, something that I would want for my scrapbook to say, wow, I was sitting right here, you know.
I'd frame it.
You know, and people may listen to this and think, the hell she's so excited about? But think about if, like you're a sports fan. And I don't know. I know I hear my kids mention names like Matsui and Jeter. I don't know what that is or what they are. They're humans, right? They're baseball players.
So.
I think so, on the Yankees. So think about if you're a sports fan and, you know, you walked in and you were sitting in the lobby and there was these two baseball greats, you know, and you got to, like, interject into their conversations and they were like, yeah, have a seat. You would be gaga, right? You'd go nuts. So that's what it's like for a ghost hunter to be sitting there with those people. Anyway, so that was a blast. Then We finished out the conference, and we made our announcement about Ghost World. We handed out all the flyers. We even had one woman, shout out to Eileen. She was the first person to register for Ghost World Conference.
Second.
Well, first official registrant. And we even gave people the break. If they registered that day, they got it for $85.
Nice.
And word to the wise, if you're an NJGHS member, or you're a member of Vince Wilson's Maryland Paranormal Coalition, or you're a member of Jeff Belanger's GhostVillage.com, you will still get that $85 gimme rate, okay, rate, up until April 30th, okay? So you have some time, but, oh, and maybe not. And if you want a booth or something for your different organization, that's selling like hotcakes.
You got to grab up quick.
Yeah. And the media is getting on board. I found out from Vince that the Marriott.com
right.
is going to tout our conference.
Oh, my God.
Okay, so that's huge. The press release went out that Jeff Belanger wrote. Get this. He got an email back from the Gettysburg Visitors and Convention Bureau. They want it on their website. They're already promoting it. They think it's awesome. Then he got an email, and he conducted an interview, which is now up online. I sent the link out to NJGHS Yahoo Groups today for the Evening Sun. Really nice interview and article on this. I mean, it's that huge that everybody's really taking notice that this is not like your normal little like conference and, you know.
Do you have what it takes to be a ghost hunter? Are you fascinated with the paranormal? Then why not take your interest to the next level and join the New Jersey Ghost Hunter Society? For a $20 lifetime membership fee, you'll receive training on our cemetery hunts, get to participate on investigative teams for private investigations, and receive discounts on books we sell. Members also get the reduced rate on special events we offer throughout the year. You can PayPal right from the homepage of www.njghs.net or send your check or money order payable to Ghost Hunters to P.O. Box 8018, Parsippany, New Jersey, 07054. Happy haunting.
Hi, I'm Kelly Weaver of the Spirit Society of Pennsylvania, and you're listening to the Deadline podcast of New Jersey Ghost Hunter Society.
Hi, welcome back. It's time for Parashare. And thanks to those of you who took the time to write in and share your great ghostly encounters and paranormal experiences, you're now entered in the monthly drawing for membership in the NJGHS. And if you win and you already have membership, you can always pass it along to someone else as a gift. It's not a problem. And if you haven't already, please send in your parashares to the deadline at njghs.net, or there's a form you can fill out on the deadline page of our site. And if your story really rocks, you can come in here to the studio and tell it yourself. And Brian will even buy you the
Dunkin' Donuts coffee.
I love the way he says it. I have to, like, wait for him to say it. It's great. And but travel would be at your own expense, but we're only right here in good old Parsippany. So,
Parsnippany.
So make sure you send in your parashares, because, you know, I think Margaret's getting writer's cramps, you know, out there in Connecticut, you know. She's doing a fantastic job. But actually, I have a new parashare person.
No.
This parashare this week comes to us from a brand new member, in fact, of the NJGHS,
right.
Kathy Udine. Right. I hope I'm saying that right, Kathy. I apologize if I'm not. And she's titled her parashare, The Protective Old Man. And here you go. My husband and I moved with our 10-month-old daughter, Megan, into our present Hopatcon home in December 1992. We bought the house from a group of siblings who were settling the estate of their recently departed father. He had built the house in the 1950s and had been its sole owner. It was a very cold, snowy winter, and I had no opportunity to play with my toddler in the backyard until the thaw in April. Several times we romped, I thought I spied a figure out of the corner of my eye in a certain corner of the yard. I got the impression that it was a stooped old man. Not stupid, she's saying stooped, like kind of stooped over, hunched over. Once I went to answer the phone, and I left my now 18-month-old daughter in her sandbox. As I looked out the back window to check on her, I now definitely saw the old man, clear as day, in that same spot. What's more, I got the impression that my little girl could see him too, because she had stopped playing and was staring in that same spot. He was only visible for a few seconds, but I now knew, as clearly as if he had spoken straight into my mind, that he was very concerned about something, and I needed to fix it. I went outside to check out this corner once and for all. Poking the ground with a long stick, I found a leaf-covered hole, nearly 5 feet deep and 20 to 22 inches across. There is no doubt in my mind that had my little girl wandered over here, she would have fallen straight into that hole and perhaps been stuck, or even worse, buried alive. I stuffed the hole with cinder blocks, bricks, dirt, and then over the entire area with a large paving slate. As I stood there with the shovel, thankful that my daughter had never gotten hurt, I felt a pat on my shoulder. As you can imagine, I never saw the old man in the yard again. How wild is
that?
Very
nice.
And she even sent a follow-up, because I wrote back to her saying, I'm definitely going to use this on the show, and she sent a little more on the same subject. Although I ended my story with the words, as you can imagine, I never saw the old man in the yard again, that doesn't mean I never saw him in my house again.
Dun, dun, dun.
He was truly a protective old man, and whenever my children were sick with a fever, usually strep, he would wake me when they were about to cry. Excuse me. Wow. I'm not sure if he spoke to me or shook me or what, but I always got a spare glimpse of him whizzing into my child's room. My mother experienced this phenomenon also. She was babysitting for me overnight once, and she was asleep on the couch. As soon as she heard my son begin to cry out, she headed down the hall, and hovering outside his door was this very concerned face of an old man. It was just a face, but it came at her quickly, and she heard or felt the word, hurry. She was very puzzled and shaken. True to form, my husband never experienced anything. It's been several years now since I have seen him. I think that's because my children are no longer little. He doesn't worry so much. However, he built the house, literally. He was a mason and carpenter, and once when my water tank burst and flooded the basement, I felt him worrying again. It was as if a little cloud of emotion following me for a day or two. Once I got the tank replaced and everything mopped up, I decided I should have a talk with him. I knew his name because I bought the house from his three children. I sat in the kitchen and I said, "Now, Mr. So-and-so," she didn't want to say his name, "I know that you were concerned, but you can leave it to me to take care of this house. It's mine now, and I love it very much. Please rest assured." Yep, you guessed it. The little cloud of emotion disappeared, and I have never felt it again. I hope he is finally at rest.
Very nice.
That's really cool, Kathy. Thank you so much for sharing that. So, I haven't had anything like that. I've heard of things like that happening.
Yeah, I've heard of similar things like that, yeah.
Yeah. But that's pretty cool. Where, like, you know, I've had it where they, like, sometimes it's a dearly departed one who comes back to warn you.
Right, right.
But that's pretty cool. That's very, very cool. Should we move on to haunted trivia?
Sure.
Okay. Now, last week we asked you a pretty easy haunted trivia. We asked you, what's the name of the haunted toy store in Sunnyvale, California? And we had a winner. Deborah Kay of, I believe, Mine Hill. She emailed in the correct answer first of Toys R Us.
Very
so,
nice.
Deborah,
very good.
I did FedEx out your bumper sticker and CD as your prizes, so thank you very much and congratulations. Now, this week's question has a skill level of quasi-simple.
Okay? Quasi-simple?
Quasi-simple, yeah.
The heck is that word?
Quasi meaning halfway, you know, sort of. Sort of simple. Here we go. In Jacksonville, Florida. Now, guess who used to live in Jacksonville for about a year and a half?
You?
Me, yeah. Okay. In Jacksonville, Florida, there is a restaurant that used to be a boarding house run by Alpha Painter, who died in 1962. Now, I'll give you a little extra clue. Painter is not spelled like one who paints with a paintbrush. It's spelled P-A-Y-N-T-E-R. Okay? Anyway, she died in 1962. Many patrons report seeing Alpha leaning over the fireplace, and her apparition shows up in the various mirrors throughout the restaurant. What is the name of this restaurant? Again, it's in Jacksonville, Florida. What is the name of the restaurant where the apparition of Alpha Painter shows up?
And it's not Denny's.
It's not Denny's, no. Now, if you know the answer, be the first person to email it to hauntedtrivia@njghs.net. And just like Deborah, you'll win the CD, crafted by our own Brian Sant of our earlier podcasts, and a bumper sticker for the NJGHS. So, give it a shot. If you're ready to take your ghost hunting to the next level, you're ready to be a certified paranormal investigator by the New Jersey Ghost Hunters Society. The certification includes 4 hours of hands-on, concentrated training by the NJGHS leaders at the most haunted prison in the United States, Eastern State Penitentiary, located in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. To participate, you must have all of your own equipment. Register online at the NJGHS.net website certification page. Costs are $125 for current members and $145 for non-members of the NJGHS who will receive their membership going forward. PayPal, MasterCard, and Visa are accepted. Upon completion of the course, submission of your report of findings, and achieving a total point score of 80 or better, you will receive your certificate and new certified paranormal investigator card from the NJGHS. All the details are on the certification page of the NJGHS.net website. So what are you waiting for? Take your hobby seriously. Become a certified paranormal investigator.
Hi, I'm Scott L. of Ghostly Talk Paranormal Talk Radio, and you're listening to Deadline Podcast of the New Jersey Ghost Hunters Society.
Okay, so once again, stay tuned to the website. It's www.njghs.net, and definitely sign up for the NJGHS Yahoo group. The link is right there on the homepage. If you're not a member and you want to become one, so you can participate in the cemetery outings. Oh, man, I'm losing it. I'm getting tired now. But if you want to participate in the cemetery hunts or any private in-home investigations that we conduct, you must be a member, and you can get the PayPal link and PayPal right from the homepage of njghs.net. And
it's a new month.
It's August. Woohoo. That means stop by the link on either the deadline page or the homepage of NJGHS for Podcast Alley. Click on that link. And it'll take you right to our little spot on Podcast Alley, and you can do your register votes here and vote for the show.
Vote for us, damn it.
Yeah, we really need to get those rankings up because we're pretty pitiful.
Come on, guys.
Please.
I mean, we're not like Hometown Tales, but...
Yeah, you know, really. And if you have like 6 email addresses, use them all.
Yeah.
You know, just keep voting under
different
emails.
Come on, guys, it takes a minute.
Yeah. And they're fast. Like, when you click on that link and register your vote, and you don't have to leave a comment if you don't want. It's no big deal.
Just give us the vote,
you know. Anyway, so thanks to Brian Sant, the NJGHS technician and producer of The Deadline.
Hail to the king, babe.
As always, our team leaders, Gregory and Sherry Irish and Laura Lindemann. And a shout-out to Don Slepian of donslepian.com for our theme song. And, of course, thanks to all of you for listening. Keep downloading the shows weekly, because at some point in life, you have to meet the deadline.